Jamie. An east wind blew through his tangled hair, as soft and fragrant as Circe's fingers. He could hear birds singing and feel the river moving beneath the boat as the sweep of the oars sent them toward the pale pink dawn. After so long in darkness, the world was so sweet that Jamie Lannister felt dizzy. "I am alive and drunk on sunlight." A laugh burst from his lips, sudden as a quail flush from cover. "Quiet," the wench grumbled, scowling. Scowl suited her broad, homely face better than a smile. Not that Jamie had ever seen her smiling. He amused himself by picturing her in one of Cersei's silken gowns in place of a studded leather jerkin. "As well dress a cow in silk as this one." But the cow could row. Beneath her rough-spun brown breeches were calves like cords of wood, and the long muscles of her arms stretched and tightened with each stroke of the oars. Even after rowing half the night, she showed no signs of tiring, which was more than could be said for his cousin, Sir Cleos, labouring on the other oar. "A big, strong peasant wench to look at, yet she speaks like one high-born, and wears long sword and dagger. Ah, but can she use them?" Jamie meant to find out, as soon as he'd rid himself of these fetters. He wore iron manacles on his wrists and a matching pair about his ankles, joined by a length of heavy chain no more than a foot long. "You'd think my word as a Lannister was not good enough," he japed as they bound him. He'd been very drunk by then, thanks to Catelyn Stark. Of their escape from River Run, he recalled only bits and pieces. There had been some trouble with the jailer, but the big wench had overcome him. After that, they had climbed an endless stair around and around. His legs were weak as grass, and he'd stumbled twice or thrice until the wench lent him an arm to lean on. At some point, he was bundled into a traveller's cloak and shoved into the bottom of a skiff. He remembered listening to Lady Catelyn command someone to raise the portcullis on the water gate. She was sending Sir Cleos Frey back to King's Landing with new terms for the Queen. She declared in a tone that brooked no argument. He must have drifted off then. The wine had made him sleepy, and it felt good to stretch, a luxury his chains had not permitted him in the cell. Jamie had long ago learned to snatch sleep in the saddle during a march. This was no harder. "Tyrion is going to laugh himself sick when he hears how I slept through my own escape." He was awake now, though, and the fetters were irksome. "My lady," he called out, "if you strike off these chains, I'll spell you at those oars." She scowled again, her face all horse teeth and glowering suspicion. "You'll wear your chains, Kingslayer. You figure to row all the way to King's Landing, wench?" "You will call me Brienne, not wench. My name is Sir Jamie, not Kingslayer. Do you deny that you slew a king?" "No. Do you deny your sex? If so, unlace those breeches and show me." He gave her an innocent smile. "I'd ask you to open your bodice, but from the look of you, that wouldn't prove much." Sir Cleos fretted. "Cousin, remember your courtesies." The Lannister blood runs thin in this one. Cleos was his Aunt Jenna's son by that dullard Eamon Frey, who had lived in terror of Lord Tywin Lannister since the day he wed his sister. When Lord Walder Frey had brought the twins into the war on the side of River Run, Sir Eamon had chosen his wife's allegiance over his father's. "Castle Rock got the worst of that bargain," Jamie reflected. Sir Cleos looked like a weasel, fought like a goose, and had the courage of an especially brave ewe. Lady Stark had promised him release if he delivered her message to Tyrion, and Sir Cleos had solemnly vowed to do so. They'd all done a deal of vowing back in that cell, Jamie most of all. That was Lady Catelyn's price for loosing him. She had laid the point of the big wench's sword against his heart and said, "Swear that you will never again take up arms against Stark nor Tully. Swear that you will compel your brother to honor his pledge to return my daughter safe and unharmed. Swear, on your honor as a knight, on your honor as a Lannister, on your honor as a sworn brother of the King's Guard. Swear it by your sister's life and your father's, and your son's, by the old guards and the new, and I'll send you back to your sister. Refuse, and I will have your blood. He remembered the prick of the steel through his rags as she twisted the point of the sword. I wonder what the High Septon would have to say about the sanctity of oaths, sworn while dead drunk, chained to a wall with a sword pressed to your chest. Not that Jamie was truly concerned about that fat fawn or the guards he claimed to serve. He remembered the pail Lady Catelyn had kicked over in his cell. A strange woman, to trust her girls to a man with shit for honour, though she was trusting him as little as she dared. She is putting her hope in Tyrion, not in me. Perhaps she is not so stupid after all, he said aloud. His captor took it wrong. I am not stupid, nor deaf. He was gentle with her. Mocking this one would be so easy, there would be no sport in it. I was speaking to myself, and not to you. It's an easy habit to slip into, in a cell. She frowned at him, pushing the oars forward, pulling them back, pushing them forward, saying nothing. As glib of tongue as she is fair of face. By your speech, I judge you nobly born. My father is Selwyn of Tarth. By the grace of the gods, Lord of Evenfall. Even that was given grudgingly. Tarth, Jamie said, a ghastly large rock in the narrow sea, as I recall. And Evenfall is sworn to Storm's End. How is it that you serve Rob of Winterfell? It is Lady Catelyn I serve. She commanded me to deliver you safe to your brother Tyrion at King's Landing, not to bandy words with you. Be silent. I've had a belly full of silence, woman. Talk with Sir Cleos, then. I have no words for monsters. Jamie hooted. Oh, are there monsters hereabouts? Hiding beneath the water, perhaps, in that thick of willows? And me, without my sword? A man who would violate his own sister, murder his king, and fling an innocent child to his death deserves no other name. Innocent? The wretched boy was spying on us. All Jamie had wanted was an hour alone with Cersei. The journey north had been one long torment, seeing her every day, unable to touch her, knowing that Robert stumbled drunkenly into her bed every night in that great creaking wheelhouse. Tyrion had done his best to keep him in a good humour, but it had not been enough. "You will be courteous as concerns Cersei, wench," he warned her. "My name is Brienne, not wench. What do you care what a monster calls you?" "My name is Brienne," she repeated, dogged as a hound. "Lady Brienne." She looked so uncomfortable that Jaime sensed a weakness. "Or would Sir Brienne be more to your taste?" He laughed. "No, I fear not. You can trick out a milk cow in crupper, crinet, and chamfron, and bart her all in silk, but that doesn't mean you can ride her into battle." "Cousin Jamie, please, you ought not to speak so roughly." Under his cloak, Sir Cleos wore a surcoat quartered with the twin towers of House Frey and the golden line of Lannister. "We have far to go. We should not quarrel among ourselves."
"When I quarrel, I do it with a sword, coz. I was speaking to the lady. Tell me, wench, are all the women on Tarth as homely as you? I pity the men if so. Perhaps they do not know what real women look like, living on a dreary mountain in the sea."
"Tarth is beautiful," the wench grunted between strokes. "The Sapphire Isle, it's called. Be quiet, monster, unless you mean to make me gag you."
"She's rude as well, isn't she, cuz?" Jamie asked Sir Cleos. "Though she has steel in her spine, I'll grant you. Not many men dare name me monster to my face."
"Though behind my back
They speak freely enough, I have no doubt.
Sir Cleos coughed nervously.
Lady Brian had those lies from Catelyn Stark, no doubt. The Starks cannot hope to defeat you with sword, sir, so now they make war with poisoned words.
They did defeat me with swords, you chinless cretin. Jaime smiled knowingly. Men will read all sorts of things into a knowing smile if you let them. Has Cousin Cleos truly swallowed this kettle of dung, or is he striving to ingratiate himself? What do we have here, an honest muttonhead or a lickspittle?
Sir Cleos prattled on blithely. Any man who believed that a sworn brother of the King's Guard would harm a child does not know the meaning of honour.
Lickspittle.
If truth be told, Jaime had come to rue heaving Brandon Stark out of that window. Cersei had given him no end of grief afterwards when the boy refused to die. He was 7, Jaime, she berated him. Even if he understood what he saw, we should have been able to frighten him into silence.
Well, I didn't think you'd want...
You never think. If the boy should wake and tell his father what he saw...
If...
He had pulled her into his lap.
If he wakes, we'll say he was dreaming. We'll call him a liar. And should worse come to worse, I'll kill Ned Stark.
And then, what do you imagine Robert will do?
Let Robert do as he pleases. I'll go to war with him if I must. The war for Cersei's cunt, the singers will call it.
Jaime, let go of me, she raged, struggling to rise. Instead, he had kissed her. For a moment she resisted, but then her mouth opened under his. He remembered the taste of wine and cloves on her tongue. She gave a shudder. His hand went to her bodice and yanked, tearing the silk so her breast spilled free, and for a time the Stark boy had been forgotten. Had Cersei remembered him afterward, and hired this man, Lady Catelyn spoke of, to make sure the boy never woke?
If she wanted him dead, she would have sent me. It's not like her to choose a cat's paw who would make such a royal butch of the killing.
Downriver, the rising sun shimmered against the wind-whipped surface of the river. The south shore was red clay, smooth as any road. Smaller streams fed into the greater, and the rotting trunks of drowned trees clung to the banks. The north shore was wilder. High, rocky bluffs rose 20 feet above them, crowned by stands of beech, oak, and chestnut. Jaime espied a watchtower on the heights ahead, growing taller with every stroke of the oars. Long before they were upon it, he knew it stood abandoned, its weathered stones overgrown with climbing roses. When the wind shifted, Sir Cleos helped the big wench run up the sail, a stiff triangle of striped red and blue canvas. Tully collars, sure to cause them grief if they encountered any Lannister forces on the river, but it was the only sail they had. Brian took the rudder, Jaime threw out the leeboard, his chains rattling as he moved. After that they made better speed, with wind and current both favouring their flight. "We could save a deal of travelling if you deliver me to my father instead of my brother," he pointed out.
"Lady Catelyn's daughters are in King's Landing. I will return with the girls or not at all."
Jaime turned to Sir Cleos.
"Cousin, lend me your knife."
"No," the woman tensed. "I will not have you armed."
Her voice was as unyielding as stone.
"She fears me, even in irons."
"Cleos, it seems I must ask you to shave me. Leave the beard, but take the hair off my head."
"You'd be shaved bald?" asked Cleos Frey.
"The realm knows Jaime Lannister as a beardless knight with long golden hair. A bald man with a filthy yellow beard may pass unnoticed. I'd sooner not be recognized while I'm in irons."
The dagger was not as sharp as it might have been. Cleos hacked away manfully, sawing and ripping his way through the mats and tossing the hair over the side. The golden curls floated on the surface of the water, gradually falling astern. As the tangles vanished, a louse went crawling down his neck. Jaime caught it and crushed it against his thumbnail. Sir Cleos picked others from his scalp and flicked them into the water. Jamie doused his head and made Sir Cleus wet the blade before he let him scrape away the last inch of yellow stubble. When that was done, they trimmed back his beard as well. The reflection in the water was a man he did not know. Not only was he bald, but he looked as though he had aged 5 years in that dungeon. His face was thinner, with hollows under his eyes and lines he did not remember.
"I don't look as much like Cersei this way. She'll hate that."
By midday, Sir Cleus had fallen asleep. His snores sounded like ducks mating. Jaime stretched out to watch the world flow past. After the dark cell, every rock and tree was a wonder. A few one-room shacks came and went, perched on tall poles that made them look like cranes. Of the folk who lived there, they saw no sign. Birds flew overhead, or cried out from the trees along the shore, and Jaime glimpsed silvery fish knifing through the water.
"Tully trout, there's a bad omen," he thought, until he saw worse.
One of the floating logs that passed turned out to be a dead man, bloodless and swollen. His cloak was tangled in the roots of a fallen tree, its colour unmistakably Lannister crimson. He wondered if the corpse had been someone he knew. The forks of the Trident were the easiest way to move goods or men across the riverlands. In times of peace, they would have encountered fisherfolk in their skiffs, grain barges being poled downstream, merchants selling needles and bolts of cloth from floating shops, perhaps even a gaily painted mummer's boat with quilted sails of 50 colours, making its way upriver from village to village and castle to castle. But the war had taken its toll. They sailed past villages, but saw no villagers. An empty net, slashed and torn and hanging from some trees, was the only sign of fisher folk. A young girl, watering a horse, rode off as soon as she glimpsed their sail. Later, they passed a dozen peasants digging in a field beneath the shell of a burnt tower house. The men gazed at them with dull eyes and went back to their labours once they decided the skiff was no threat. The Red Fork was wide and slow, a meandering river of loops and bends dotted with tiny wooded islets and frequently choked by sandbars and snags that lurked just below the water's surface. Brienne seemed to have a keen eye for the dangers, though, and always seemed to find the channel. When Jaime complimented her on her knowledge of the river, she looked at him suspiciously and said, "I do not know the river. Tarth is an island. I learned to manage oars and sail before I ever sat a horse." Sir Cleos sat up and rubbed at his eyes. "Gods, my arms are sore. I hope the wind lasts." He sniffed at it. "I smell rain." Jaime would welcome a good rain. The dungeons of River Run were not the cleanest place in the Seven Kingdoms. By now he must smell like an overripe cheese. Cleos squinted downriver.
"Smoke!"
A thin grey finger crooked them on. It was rising from the south bank several miles on, twisting and curling. Below, Jaime made out the smouldering remains of a large building, an alive oak full of dead women. The crows had scarcely started on their corpses. The thin ropes cut deep into the soft flesh of their throats, and when the wind blew, they twisted and swayed. "This was not chivalrously done," said Brienne, when they were close enough to see it clearly. "No true knight would condone such wanton butchery."
"True knights see worse every time they ride to war, wench," said Jaime, "and do worse, yes."
Brienne turned the rudder towards the shore.
"I'll leave no innocence to be food for crows." "A heartless wench. Crows need to eat as well. Stay to the river and leave the dead alone, woman."
They landed upstream of where the great oak leaned out over the water. As Brienne lowered the sail, Jaime climbed out, clumsy in his chains. The Red Fork filled his boots and soaked through the ragged breeches. Laughing, he dropped to his knees, plunged his head under the water, and came up drenched and dripping. His hands were caked with dirt, and when he rubbed them clean in the current, they seemed thinner and paler than he remembered. His legs were stiff as well, and unsteady when he put his weight upon them.
I was too bloody long in Hoster Tully's dungeon.
Brian and Cleos dragged the skiff onto the bank. The corpses hung above their heads, ripening in death like foul fruit.
One of us will need to cut them down, the wench said.
I'll climb, Jamie waded ashore, clanking. Just get these chains off.
The wench was staring up at one of the dead women. Jamie shuffled closer with small stutter steps, the only kind the footlong chain permitted. When he saw the crude sign hung about the neck of the highest corpse, he smiled.
They lay with lions, he read. Oh, yes, woman, this was most unchivalrously done. But by your side, not mine. I wonder who they were, these women.
Tavern wenches, said Sir Cleos Frey. This was an inn, I remember it now. Some men of my escort spent the night here when we last returned to River Run.
Nothing remained of the building but the stone foundation and a tangle of collapsed beams, charred black. Smoke still rose from the ashes. Jamie left brothels and whores to his brother Tyrion. Circe was the only woman he had ever wanted.
The girls pleasured some of my lord father's soldiers, it would seem. Perhaps serve them food and drink. That's how they earn their traitors' collars, with a kiss and a cup of ale.
He glanced up and down the river to make certain they were quite alone.
This is Brackenland. Lord Jonas might have ordered them killed. My father burned his castle. I fear he loves us not.
It might be Mark Piper's work, said Sir Cleos, or that wisp of the wood, Beric Dondarrion, though I'd heard he kills only soldiers. Perhaps a band of Roose Bolton's Northmen.
Bolton was defeated by my father on the Green Fork.
But not broken, said Sir Cleos. He came south again when Lord Tywin marched against the Fords. The word at Riverrun was that he'd taken Harrenhal from Sir Aimery Lorch.
Jamie liked the sound of that not at all. Brian, he said, granting her the courtesy of the name in the hopes that she might listen.
If Lord Bolton holds Harrenhal, both the Trident and the King's Road are likely watched.
He thought he saw a touch of uncertainty in her big blue eyes.
You are under my protection. They need to kill me.
I shouldn't think that would trouble them.
I am as good a fighter as you, she said defensively. I was one of King Renly's chosen seven. With his own hands, he cloaked me with the striped silk of the Rainbow Guard.
The Rainbow Guard? Oh, you and six other girls, was it? A singer once said that all maids are fair in silk. But he never met you, did he?
The woman turned red.
We have graves to dig.
She went to climb the tree. The lower limbs of the oak were big enough for her to stand upon, once she had gotten up the trunk. She walked among the leaves, dagger in hand, cutting down the corpses. Flies swarmed around the bodies as they fell, and the stench grew worse with each one she dropped.
This is a deal of trouble to take for whores, Sir Cleos complained. What are we supposed to dig with? We have no spades, and I will not use my sword.
Brian gave a shout. She jumped down rather than climbing.
To the boat! Be quick! There's a sail!
They made what haste they could, though Jamie could hardly run, and had to be pulled back into the skiff by his cousin. Brian shoved off with an oar and raised sail hurriedly.
Sir Cleos, I'll need you to row as well.
He did as she bid. The skiff began to cut the water a bit faster. Current, wind, and oars all worked for them. Jamie sat chained, peering upriver. Only the top of the other sail was visible. With the way the Red Fork looped, it looked to be across the fields, moving north behind a screen of trees while they moved south. But he knew that was deceptive. He lifted both hands to shade his eyes.
Mud red and watery blue, he announced.
Brian's big mouth worked soundlessly, giving her the look of a cow chewing its cud.
"Faster, sir."
The inn soon vanished behind them, and they lost sight of the top of the sail as well, but that meant nothing. Once the pursuers swung around the loop, they would become visible again.
"We can hope the noble Tullys will stop to bury the dead whores, I suppose."
The prospect of returning to his cell did not appeal to Jamie.
"Tyrion could think of something clever now, but all that occurs to me is to go at them with a sword."
For the good part of an hour, they played peek and seek with the pursuers, sweeping around bends and between small wooded isles. Just when they were starting to hope that somehow they might have left behind the pursuit, the distant sail became visible again. Sir Cleos paused in his stroke.
"The others take them."
He wiped the sweat from his brow.
"Row,"
Brian said.
"That is a river galley coming after us," Jamie announced after he'd watched for a while.
With every stroke, it seemed to grow a little larger.
9 oars on each side, which means 18 men. More if they're crowded on fighters as well as rowers, and larger sails than ours. We cannot outrun her."
Sir Cleos froze at his oars.
18, you said? 6 for each of us. I'd want 8, but these bracelets hinder me somewhat.
Jamie held up his wrists.
Unless the Lady Brian would be so kind as to unshackle me.
She ignored him, putting all her efforts into her stroke.
"We had half a night's start on them," Jamie said. "They've been rowing since dawn, resting 2 oars at a time. They'll be exhausted. Just now the sight of our sail has given them a burst of strength, but that will not last. We ought to be able to kill a good many of them."
Sir Cleos gaped.
"But there are 18. "At the least. More like 20 or 25.
His cousin groaned.
"We can't hope to defeat 18.
"Did I say we could?
The best we can hope for is to die with swords in our hands."
He was perfectly sincere. Jamie Lannister had never been afraid of death. Brienne broke off rowing. Sweat had stuck strands of her flax-coloured hair to her forehead, and her grimace made her look homelier than ever.
"You are under my protection," she said, her voice so thick with anger that it was almost a growl. He had to laugh at such fierceness. "She's the hound with tits," he thought, "or would be, if she had any tits to speak of."
"Then protect me, wench, or free me to protect myself."
The galley was skimming downriver, a great wooden dragonfly. The water around her was churned white by the furious action of her oars. She was gaining visibly, the men on her deck crowding forward as she came on. Metal glinted in their hands, and Jamie could see bows as well.
Archers.
He hated archers. At the prow of the onrushing galley stood a stocky man with a bald head, bushy grey eyebrows, and brawny arms. Over his mail he wore a soiled white surcoat with a weeping willow embroidered in pale green, but his cloak was fastened with a silver trout.
"River runs captain of guards."
In his day, Sir Robin Ryger had been a notably tenacious fighter, but his day was done. He was of an age with Hoster Tully, and had grown old with his lord. When the boats were 50 yards apart, Jamie cupped his hands around his mouth and shouted back over the water,
"Come to wish me godspeed, Sir Robin."
"Come to take you back, Kingslayer,"
Sir Robin Ryger bellowed.
"How is it that you've lost your golden hair?"
"I hope to blind my enemies with the sheen off my head. It's worked well enough for you."
Sir Robin was unamused. The distance between skiff and galley had shrunk to 40 yards.
"Throw your oars and your weapons into the river, and no one need be harmed."
Sir Cleos twisted around.
"Jamie, tell him we were freed by Lady Catelyn, an exchange of captives, lawful."
Jamie told him, for all the good it did.
"Catelyn Stark does not rule in River Run,"
Sir Robin shouted back. Four archers crowded into position on either side of him, two standing and two kneeling.
"Cast your sword into the water!"
"I have no sword," he returned, "but if I did, I'd stick it through your belly and hack the balls off those four cravens."
A flight of arrows answered him. One thudded into the mast, two pierced the sail, and the fourth missed Jamie by a foot. Another of the red fork's broad loops loomed before them. Brian angled the skiff across the bend. The yard swung as they turned, their sail cracking as it filled with wind. Ahead, a large island sat in midstream. The main channel flowed right. To the left, a cut-off ran between the island and the high bluffs of the north shore. Brian moved the tiller, and the skiff sheered left, sail rippling. Jamie watched her eyes.
"Pretty eyes," he thought, "and calm."
He knew how to read a man's eyes. He knew what fear looked like.
"She is determined, not desperate."
30 yards behind, the galley was entering the bend.
"Sir Cleos, take the tiller," the wench commanded. "Kingslayer, take an oar and keep us off the rocks."
"As my lady commands."
An oar was not a sword, but the blade could break a man's face if well swung, and the shaft could be used to parry. Sir Cleos shoved the oar into Jamie's hand and scrambled aft. They crossed the head of the island and turned sharply down the cut-off, sending a wash of water against the face of the bluff as the boat tilted. The island was densely wooded, a tangle of willows, oaks, and tall pines that cast deep shadows across the rushing waters, hiding snags and the rotting trunks of drowned trees. To their left, the bluff rose sheer and rocky, and at its foot, the river foamed whitely around broken boulders and tumbles of rock fallen from the cliff face. They passed from sunlight into shadow, hidden from the galley's view between the green wall of the trees and the stony grey-brown bluff.
"A few moments' respite from the arrows," Jamie thought, pushing them off a half-submerged boulder.
The skiff rocked. He heard a soft splash, and when he glanced around, Brian was gone. A moment later he spied her again, pulling herself from the water at the base of the bluff. She waded through a shallow pool, scrambled over some rocks, and began to climb. Sir Cleos goggled, mouth open.
"Fool," thought Jamie.
"Ignore the wench," he snapped at his cousin. "Steer!"
They could see the sail moving behind the trees. The river galley came into full view at the top of the cut-off, 25 yards behind. Her bow swung hard as she came around, and a half-dozen arrows took flight, but all went well wide. The motion of the two boats was giving the archers difficulty, but Jamie knew they'd soon learn to compensate. Brian was halfway up the cliff face, pulling herself from handhold to handhold.
"Rygar's sure to see her, and once he does, he'll have those bowmen bring her down."
Jamie decided to see if the old man's pride would make him stupid.
"Sir Robin," he shouted, "hear me for a moment."
Sir Robin raised a hand, and his archers lowered their bows.
"Say what you will, Kingslayer, but say it quickly."
The skiff swung through a litter of broken stones as Jamie called out,
"I know a better way to settle this. Single combat, you and I." "I was not born this morning, Lannister." "No, but you'll like to die this afternoon."
Jamie raised his hand so the other could see the manacles.
"I'll fight you in chains. What could you fear?" "Not you, sir. If the choice were mine, I'd like nothing better. But I am commanded to bring you back alive, if possible. Bowman,"
he signaled them on,
"notch, draw, loop."
The range was less than 20 yards. The archers could scarcely have missed. But as they pulled on their longbows, a rain of pebbles cascaded down around them. Small stones rattled on their deck, bounced off their helms, and made splashes on both sides of the bow. Those who had the wits enough to understand raised their eyes just as a boulder the size of a cow detached itself from the top of the bluff. Sir Robin shouted in dismay. The stone tumbled through the air, struck the face of the cliff, cracked in two, and smashed down on them. The larger piece snapped the mast, tore through the sail, sent two of the archers flying into the river, and crushed the leg of a rower as he bent over his oar. The rapidity with which the galley began to fill with water suggested that the smaller fragment had punched right through her hull. The oarsmen's screams echoed off the bluff while the archers flailed wildly in the current. From the way they were splashing, neither man could swim. Jamie laughed. By the time they emerged from the cut-off, the galley was foundering amongst pools, eddies, and snags, and Jamie Lannister had decided that the guards were good. Sir Robin and his thrice-damned archers would have a long, wet walk back to River Run, and he was rid of the big, homely wench as well.
I could not have planned it better myself, once I am free of these irons.
Sir Cleos raised a shout. When Jamie looked up, Bryene was lumbering across the clifftop well ahead of them, having cut across a finger of land while they were following the bend in the river. She threw herself off the rock and looked almost graceful as she folded into a dive. It would have been ungracious to hope that she would smash her head on a stone. Sir Cleos turned the skiff toward her. Thankfully, Jamie still had his oar.
One good swing when she comes paddling up, and I'll be free of her.
Instead, he found himself stretching the oar out over the water. Bryene grabbed hold, and Jamie pulled her in. As he helped her into the skiff, water ran from her hair and dripped from her sodden clothing to a pool on the deck.
She is even uglier wet. Who would have thought it possible?
You're a bloody stupid wench, he told her. We could have sailed on without you. I suppose you expect me to thank you. I want none of your thanks, Kingslayer. I swore an oath to bring you safe to King's Landing.
And you actually mean to keep it?
Jamie gave her his brightest smile.
Now, there's a wonder.